The Silent Inheritance, written by Joy Dettman and read by Deirdre Rubenstein. 5 days a week, Sarah Carter boarded the 7:40 train at Blackburn Station, opened her current library book, and read her way into the city. Not today. An oversized male boarded at Box Hill and sat beside her. She used up little space. He required a larger share of that seat, and his newspaper required more, so she closed her book and read his newspaper, A Herald Sun. Its middle pages jammed this morning with messages of undying love from Bub, Cutie, and Sexy Boy. Only storybook love was undying. In life it died, or the people you loved died. She read one message where Cupid shot an arrow from Rob to Sarah. She worked with a Robert Webb, but he was a Bob, not a Rob, and her office manager, who developed the recent habit of placing his hand on her shoulder when he wanted her attention. A light-fingered, timid touch, which reminded her of a huge, hairy huntsman spider she'd brushed from her shoulder one day in the tent. Still cringed when she recalled that tent and the creeping touch of the huntsman spider. Some names slid easily from the tongue. Bob Webb did. Sarah Carter did. Other names twisted the tongue. Jacqueline Jefferson twisted it. Gillian Jones used to, though not anymore. Never thought of her now. Never said her name. And they were almost there. She pushed her library book into a too large tapestry shoulder bag that needed a new zip, or she needed a new bag. Maybe she'd shot herself one if she got the job. She deserved it. She'd worked for David Crow for 12 years and had barely missed a day. 5 days a week she climbed those stairs at Museum Station, walked that same block to the same office building in Melbourne's sun and wind and rain, and she knew every crack in the pavement and knew it would be shimmering with heat when she walked it in reverse tonight to catch the train home. Channel 7's weather girl had promised Melbourne a day in the mid-40s, and another total fire ban. Sarah had been 6 years old the day she'd followed her mother's pointing finger to where the mists of distance had melded Melbourne's tall buildings into a singular, mystical grey castle shimmering in the clouds. Then, Daddy had turned the old green wagons back on that castle because Gran and Gramps' farm was the other way. They were going to live there. They were going to stay in Gram and Grant's house forever and live on honey. 7, when she'd sighted that grey castle again, this time through the rear windscreen of a different car. A sad sighting, that one. It meant no more farm, no more honey and baby cows with their pretty white faces, no more Gran and Gramp and warm cardigans Gran made from the sheep's woolly coats. Hadn't seen her grandparents or the farm again. Or not until she was 18, when she'd bought herself a one-way bus ticket across the Nullarbor to that mystical castle in the sky and got lost in its crowd. Not so mystical that day. Melbourne had been shimmering, but with heat,